Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, I am privileged to have a very, very senior lawyer who is making waves, not just in India and overseas, Amir Singh Pasricha. Amir, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you.
Amir is from St. Columbus High School. He's from St. Stephen's College. He did his law from Oxford University, and he's worked with J.B. Dalachandji before he founded his own company. So, Amir, tell me a little bit about some of your highlights as a lawyer in your early life.
I suppose the beginning was Dalachandji. He was a highlight.
Correct.
Because he'd been through every big case in the country, from, you know, the fundamental rights cases to Indira Gandhi's case, the, you know, emergency, everything. So there was a lot of history that I went with when I met him. Hmm. And I started something called the J.B. Dalachandji debate because of him, which has been quite interesting and successful and controversial. We had one of the big dignitaries of India walk out of it because it was quite... So we've had, I mean, that was the beginning, and we had interesting cases there. We did a lot of commercial work, which is utterly boring for anyone to listen to. But I think one of the highlights, an interesting one, is when in 2004, I did something for actually my mother-in-law. Mm-hmm. We were in the High Court, and I was with a senior counsel who I will not name because mm-hmm. I think he was wrong. I said the Hindu Succession Act has a problem. It's not fair to women.
Correct.
And he looked at me and he said, and you're going to correct that, Amir. And I said, well, you know, it's against the Constitution. And I was naturally much younger than him. So it was, he laughed off. Mm-hmm. And then the next week I went and saw Mr. Ashok Desai, who was a very well-known senior counsel, former Attorney General of India. Mm-hmm. And I said, can we fix this? Mm-hmm. So he looks at me and says, as a matter of fact, you can. Mm-hmm. Why don't you file a petition? And we did. It was drafted by J.R. Midda, who's now a High Court judge. Mm-hmm. And I settled with me, as my name was also on it. And it was titled Jyoti Wazir versus Union of India. Mm-hmm. And set the ball rolling to say that the Hindu Succession Act was unfair to women. As you can, I mean, we all know, even till today. And it's funny, you reminded me, because about 2-3 weeks ago, Justice Arun Mishra of the Supreme Court, who has his share of controversy, did something amazing mm-hmm. in that he took that same amendment and lifted it to another level. And so when we walked into the court, I think Ashok Bhai appeared with us. He was the senior leading us. Mm-hmm. And within seconds of him opening his mouth, mm-hmm. the chief said, we'll issue notice on this. We'll see. Let's have a look. Because there was a law commission report already there, which said that this should be corrected. And no government wanted to fiddle. Mm-hmm. But I must give the Congress great credit for that time. I think it might have been Mrs. Sonia Gandhi behind it, because you needed a woman somewhere behind to have seen that this was wrong. Because within 6 weeks, the government came back and said, we agree. Wow. We didn't have to fight. Yes. And we got the Hindu Succession Amendment Bill, which became operable law within a year on the 5th of September 2005. And you can see its effect till today. You know, this nonsense about them not being co-partners in a HUF. I mean, we don't have an HUF subsisting in my family, but my grandfathers both had it and things like that. It was a very strange concept of having an HUF but not allowing women in.
No women, I know.
And then there was this other concept that the mother had a share but not the daughter, which was bizarre. So I think that was a welcome reform. And then there was also Section 23, which is what we were after, which said that a man can't, but a woman can divide a house by asking for a partition. Mm-hmm. And again, I said, this was what I was after. I said, this is patently wrong. And everybody said it's been there because Mr. Nehru was bringing the pendulum back mm-hmm. from a lot of oppression against women to something close to center. Mm-hmm. But he couldn't. There were riots in 1956 when the Hindu mm-hmm. Succession Act of that form had been passed. Wow. So it was an accepted little cocktail which balanced the traditionalists, as we call them. And so I feel I played a small part in history with that. And yeah. That was an interesting case that we argued. So I didn't.
Just to continue with this for a minute, under the Act now, are women and men equal? Or are there still gaps?
To my mind, they are. And now there are three Supreme Court judgments, which the only controversy which survived was when does it take effect? And I think in effect, Justice Mishra has, in his judgment, turned it around and said, well, anything that is subsisting has to be decided, will be decided in favor so of the woman. So in effect, any pending case where this issue comes up would be decided to say that they are equal co-partners in an existing HUF. But if the HUF has been dissolved, then it's over. Then there's no scope. And those, of course, there are hundreds of thousands of HUFs that you cannot reopen rights that have crystallized and HUFs that were dissolved in the past if they were validly dissolved. But limitation comes in and you can't go back. I mean, the specifics of this would take a long time to
understand. I understand. So let's move to the next question. You know, you have specialized in the area of corporate advisory matters, commercial disputes, arbitration, and FDI.
Yes.
What was the reason you decided to take this specialization and not something else?
It's a very good question, and I'm glad you asked, because from my point of view, when I joined the profession, and Dada Chanji also, there was a lot of statement by him and others that the legal system had a lot of undercurrents which were not nice. Right. Criminal law became automatically ruled out because I wasn't willing to take packets of money and I haven't earned much black money. Mm-hmm. In fact, that's been one. It's very, I mean, there's no cash that comes in. So that whole practice side of things and fixing and being a fixer wasn't part of my life.
Okay.
So commercial work, especially involving foreign clients, airlines, particularly, I did a lot of work with airlines, foreign governments. I've represented Canada. I've represented, I'm the honorary legal advisor to the British High Commission, which started about 2 years ago. I've been to the French. I've represented the European Union. These are clients who have kept, you know, things very straight and very, for me, perfectly right. So it was a niche that I picked up because it was easy to stick with the black and white.
I agree.
And arbitration for me is great fun in a lot of ways. I've won, I think, almost all my arbitrations. I've had fair successes because if you hang in there and you do things with a lot of detail, you get the result. So for me, if you give me an arbitration which is in depth, that's what I enjoy. But if you give me something where you say, you know, just go for a hearing and handle it and wing it, I'm not that type of lawyer.
Beautiful. So tell me, Amir, you know, you're such a senior lawyer. You've seen courts across the entire spectrum. Let's talk of justice in India. And there's the old phrase, justice delayed is justice denied. Courts in India take forever. What are your thoughts on speeding up the system of, giving out justice?
Ashutosh, you picked up on the one thing which I'm doing.
Okay.
And I strongly believe in.
Okay.
So I started this in 95 with Mr. Surabji. It was the first time I brought it up.
Mm-hmm.
And this just remained simmering till 2016. And I put it to the International Bar Association. And they looked at me like, what are we going to do about it?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, if you can help me, I want to set up a task force to suggest to the Indian establishment how it has been done abroad.
Mm-hmm.
How we have reformed legal systems in Malaysia, for example, in the UK, etc. And we don't have to always talk about more judges and more money and more infrastructure, which we've heard enough of.
Yeah.
What we need to talk about is some changing of the system.
Mm-hmm.
Firstly, I mean, I find our judges are extremely indulgent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because of this concept of giving everybody a hearing, and it goes back to Antule's case and so on and so forth in the 70s, where the judges were told, you know, audi alteram partem is supreme. India has been suppressed for years, and, you know, procedural rights must come in. and time limits matter, but this big, huge capital B, but was, you know, procedure and all that aside, no matter what happens, you have to give them a patient hearing.
Correct.
Then you have to write a long, detailed judgment, which bores you ad nauseum because it sometimes comes out in five different judges with five different judgments when you have to make sense of it. And then you have these conclusions, which nobody really understands because by the end of the judgment, they've all gone to sleep. So you have, unfortunately, too much justice imparted by these judges. And they're taught like that. Succinct, short judgments are very rare. And, you know, if I was supposed to join the bench at one point, I was almost scoping for it, but I didn't for some personal reasons. And I suppose money also. The idea of writing a judgment to me, if I had been a judge, would be to listen and give limited time to both sides. Give them a green, yellow, and a red light. And then say, at the end of this, you will keep quiet. I'm sorry that there'll be some injustice to you, that I won't hear your whole Ram Kahani. Thank you very much. But that's the way it is. So that's one of the problems. The second problem with the judicial system is some of the judges, and I was just talking to one who's becoming a judge yesterday. I had a long chat with him, and he's a wonderful man. And I said to him, well, what have you been doing? He said, one of the things I've been told is not to just treat it as a mission, and that it is, you know, it is a job. And I feel exactly the opposite. I feel that for those 12 years that you are there, they should treat it as a mission.
Correct.
And a constitutional purpose. Many do, by the way, many do. But it's the ones who do who get bogged down with too much work and it's unequally distributed and then they take too much time writing these long, lofty judgments.
I agree with you.
So that's the issue of speed. And we're doing a seminar on it on Saturday with the PhD on what is called unclogging the legal system. That's one of the beginnings. And the IBA, the International Bar Association, is giving us some level of support for this project, which hopefully will take off in the year.
Well, I sincerely hope you can get something done. I mean, you know, cases are stuck for 10 years, 15 years, and, you know, generations pass away and nothing happens.
I'm sorry, you're wrong. They've been stuck for 60 and 70 years.
Okay, I stand corrected.
We had the Ram Janma Bhoomi case. If you look at it, it's bizarre. It started in 1951, and it was decided in 2019. Then you have a case with Abhishek Singh we talked about, which was 50 years old. You can't do this. You cannot call it justice.
I agree. So, you know, let me share one small experience I had in some family matter that's been going on for a long time. And this hearing happened on video. And I was amazed at how fast things were moving on video. And I wasn't supposed to speak, but I did ask the judge. I said, sir, why don't you just switch to video recording? I mean, you don't have to waste time, thousands of people coming into your courts. And he just laughed. He didn't give me a response. But I thought that during when video hearings were going on, it was very efficient. What are your thoughts?
So I've appeared in the Supreme Court within the last month. I've actually got a strange record. I was appearing in three courts at the same time, which you couldn't have done earlier. There was a three-hour hearing in the Supreme Court, so we put it on one laptop. In fact, I've got that laptop here. So I had a parallel thing going on. And we had an iPad, and we, at the time when we had to speak, we were there. So that saved the court's time. I can't say I was present in all three hearings, but I had to speak for hardly 10 minutes in the Supreme Court hearing. Then I had to speak for about 5 minutes in each of the High Court hearings. And we managed to do that comfortably sitting in my office. So the efficiency is higher and the chances of adjournment because counsel are not available is less. On the other side, I fear some injustices are still happening and our judges are not yet trained for that. One of them is when that circling thing happens, you've lost a counsel. He may be trying to speak and he can't.
Correct.
And in the Supreme Court, we've got a tremendous problem because of that video. The courtmaster doesn't let you in. If he doesn't recognize your name, sometimes he won't let you in. So, I mean, I'm grateful that to some extent they recognize me, but and I've been able to. But there were 128 people on the hearing who'd been given the link. And there were eight of us who spoke, of which that day maybe there were four who spoke. So you know, you had to be open, your mic had to be accessible to you. And the courts have a tough time. If there's a ringing going on, the judge gets very upset. And that can actually lose you your case. Because if you're not well known enough, your name doesn't ring, pop a bell, or you don't know how to use the chat, or you've come to the Supreme Court for the first time or a high court for the first time, you could be non-suited. You could lose because of your video. That's dangerous.
Okay, I understand. So let me ask you the next question. You know, and you practice in courts outside India. My question is, I was talking to some friends who are lawyers overseas, and they said, we can't practice in India.
I don't blame them.
Why? No, what is the reason?
You know, a judge of the London, of the High Court in London, mm-hmm. close friend of ours, he died recently. I remember him well. He said, I asked him, I couldn't help it. I said, Justice Knowles, how many times did you take off, you know, not come to work during your, like, work days? So he looks at me and says, what do you mean? So I said, I mean, you know, you must have not come to work on a working day. How many times in your career would you do that in a year? So he was horrified. He looked at me and he said, well, I was on the bench for 22 years, my dear. And I cannot remember a day that I took off. So I said, but judge, you might have got sick. And he said, I might have done, but that didn't mean I wouldn't go to work. I told the recorder that, you know, I'd like to go home a little early, or I'd come for a short while because I wasn't feeling well. And that was maybe five times in those 22 years. But I wouldn't not come to court. There were people waiting, you know, for justice. And he was, the blood drained from his face. It was such an unbelievable concept. And by contrast, if you understand from the judges, somebody who says, and these are judges I respect who say good things. I have never been late to my court. And then the next sentence he says, if I was getting late, I would take the day off.
Wow.
I said, okay, that's the right thing to do. I mean, you see, there's a difference in approach and commitment. And that's one of the things which has hurt the judiciary, because Justice Anand, I want to give you one quick, was a close friend of ours. He was the Chief Justice of India. And I met him and I was a little critical. And I said, judge, you know, in the High Court, in the Delhi High Court, you say there's so much pendency. Well, judge, they've gone home. He said, what do you mean? And I said, check the board. It's on the electronic board. And this is some years ago, so I can tell it. Most of them are retired. Correct. He said, what do you mean, Mr. Pastrich? I said, sir, they have hundreds of thousands of cases pending and they have all gone home by 3 o'clock, 2 o'clock, some of them. He said, that's not possible. I said, I'm telling you, that's the way it is. So he sent his team and he checked and he met me a month later. And he said, I think I fixed it, but it was shocking. So I said, what did you do? He said, well, the thing was, we noticed that, and they always talked in the plural and they still do. We noticed that, you know, the bench would find an excuse to get up, usually because they would have a heavy board, something like 60 matters. And then they would keep time for some case that was to happen in the afternoon. That case would get adjourned because of one of you monsters in the profession who's left his glasses behind or didn't show up. And so the judge would say, oh, I've got time off. And then I said, what about the regular list? There's a regular list that is a backup list. And he said, well, nobody is looking at regulars at all. So I said, don't you think we need to clear those arrears?
Correct.
So he said, that's my point. So I've done something. I said, what did you do? So Justice Anand actually personally phoned up those judges, each one of them in turn, and told them, sab ghar mein theek hai. Is everything all right at home? Is your family? No, I was just calling because I noticed that you weren't sitting in the court in the afternoon for the last 3 days. So they got a message sort of And this is a true story. That was how he pitched it, did something which I thought was a great initiative from his side, and he started monitoring it. But you see, and by and large, Delhi High Court, now they work till the end of the day. But the fact was that there was a time when it was perfectly normal for judges to be on the golf course in the afternoon, because after all, they finished their 120 matter long list. Why? 40 to 50 matters would be adjourned because one or the other counsel wants it.
Correct.
And about 1 hour is spent every day in adjournments, if not more, even today. And then there's a certain amount of time spent in haranguing about the dates and about, you know, miscellaneous things. So this is one of the, we are playing.
But you know, on a lighter note, if you think about it, when in the IT industry, you say that someone has been put on the bench, it means there's no work to do.
Yeah.
When an IT person is on the bench, means he's supposed to be just sitting idle. When there is work, I'll call you. You know, joining the bench is not a very nice thing to say in the IT world.
Well, we're not in the
all IT. Our honorable judges are joining in any case.
So this is quite a different world, I have to say. And the bench for us is always a very highly elevated bench.
I agree. So I hope I haven't,
No.
Contempt of court by saying
comparison.
But so let me move. I've got time for one question, and that's a personal question for you. You know, you have such an amazing set of things that you do. Polo, golf, trekking, you know, and all the other things that you have interest and commitments are there. You're a successful lawyer. How do you handle, and you know, when I was reading about you, you've got two children, you know, you married in 1998. How do you manage your work-life balance? I mean, all your interests, family, and the incredible amount of pioneering work that you're doing.
But I think the most important thing in that is something which I saw on a WhatsApp video recently, mm-hmm. the difference between men and women. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw it, but it had a woman with the brain is all wired with everything is connected.
Correct.
And men are very different. They have boxes. Mm-hmm. And for each thing, they have a box.
Correct.
I believe one of the reasons why men are reasonably successful in what they do, if they ever do it, mm-hmm. is because they do compartmentalize. Mm-hmm. So if you give your unadulterated focus and time to one thing for even a few minutes, and you say, I've got to get this done today, whether it's a list, it's a document, or a dictation, or a petition, or a hearing, or a preparation, and you say, this time I'm going to give, and don't disturb me, I've got to do this. Mm. You will get it done. The problem is if you look at a mountain and you don't start climbing it. Mm. And I think, whether we did trekking also, I've been near Everest Base Camp. And I remember that was a long time ago, 2009. But when we saw those things to climb and when they were spread out, it was scary. But until you started on it, you didn't make progress. And then you realize when you reached that peak and you looked down and you saw the earth spread out below you, how great it was. And that was one small step at a time.
Yeah.
And I have to say one lovely story there, because I had my daughter with me. She was 10 and she remembers it well. I had a Mars bar at every turn because the poor kid just was exhausted. Mm. And then she see me dangling the Mars bar. Come on, bacha, one more turn.
Fine.
And I think she kept me going also. And I was maybe 10 years younger, 11 years younger. It was a great, great trip. And the polo, as far as I know, I mean, I don't know how long I'll carry it on, but it is a sport of kings. It keeps you coming back because it's a great thrill. Mm. And being able to ride a 450, 500 kilo horse at full gallop exercises every muscle, everything you know to survive. And if you come out alive, it's pretty good. I'm still playing squash also about 3-4 times a month at least.
Terrific.
So that's
And you're a golfer.
I'm not an avid golfer because moving from polo and squash to golf has been quite a challenge.
I believe
that they're very different sports. And sometimes I can't understand the object of putting that hole in that ball in the hole, but I still do it. Okay. Mr. Surabji was absolutely disgusted with the game when I talked to him about it once. And he said, golf. I'd much rather hear a symphony or a jazz quartet. So I'll become a a great golf lover when the game loves me and gives back to me. Right now, my balls always go in the wrong fairway.
That's okay. We all do that. So, Amir, thank you very much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you.
It's a pleasure.
I mean, I think I would love to do more chats with you on some interesting cases, but, you know, it's been such an amazing interview talking to you. Thank you again, and I wish you lots of luck. Keep doing all the pioneering work that you're doing. Thank you.
Cheers.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast, a platform that brings you knowledge, experience, and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website, www.tbcy.in, to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.